And when you think about sustainability through the lens of supply chain and even digital, 50 to 80% of the revenue spend happens in supply chain, and so do up to 85% of the environmental impacts, social impacts of supply chain. So who better than us as supply chain practitioners who have that end-to-end interconnected view of the world, of business, of the communities where we operate to really do something epic.
Good afternoon or good evening, wherever you are in the world. This is the Digital Supply Chain Podcast, and I am your host, Tom Rafferty. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Digital Supply Chain Podcast. My name is Tom Rafferty. This is the first of a new series that we're going to run on women in supply chain. And with me, I have two of the highest profile women in supply chain today, Deborah and Sherry. Deborah and Sherry, would you like to introduce yourselves?
Hello, I'm Deborah Dole. Thanks, Tom, for having us on. The most important supply chain related introduction about me is that I have a deep love for inventory.
Fascinating. And that laugh there is from Sherry. Sherry, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hello, world, digital supply chain folks. My name is Sherry Heinisch, and my vision is to change the world through sustainable supply chain, evangelizing the SDGs, and making the world a better place, the world that we share. I'm also affectionately called the Supply Chain Queen, and I have a podcast with Deborah called The Supply Chain Revolution, where we share provocative points of view that challenge paradigms for progress. Say it three times. Woohoo!
So, Sherry, for anyone who is unfamiliar, because this is a digital supply chain podcast, not a sustainability podcast, so people might not be aware. What are the SDGs?
Sure. So the SDGs are a framework where we can achieve, as the human race can achieve, economic and social and environmental prosperity in the world that we share. And with everything happening right now with COVID-19, this is really important for us to understand that we're all connected. And the SDGs are 17 interconnected goals that would help us to achieve a better world by 2030. So this is really about the decade of action. How can we encourage a world that has no hunger, where we have economic growth and prosperities in the community where we operate that supply chain touches? Responsible consumption, responsible production, where we protect life below water and life on land. And it's really a beautiful vision. I've devoted my life to really sharing this picture and framework of a better world that's super tangible, that people can connect to, and that we can really mobilize each other in a meaningful way in the world we share. We have to get there. We have to get in the canoe. Deborah and I always talk about this, like, get in the canoe. We can do it. And we need inspiration right now, more than ever, Tom.
Sure. No, I get that completely. I'm a former sustainability analyst for 7 years or so before I joined SAP. So, you know, you're completely speaking my lingo here. But tell me, I mean, maybe Deborah, jump in here. What does sustainability have to do with supply chain?
Great question. So one of the topics that I love most, which is related to but different than sustainability, is the idea of a circular economy. And I'll explain what that is briefly, but the answer to your question is that the way the world operates is through supply chains. So every supply chain manager impacts the planet and impacts sustainability. And when you talk about financial sustainability, environmental sustainability, social sustainability, the choices we all make in our day-to-day impact that. Where we buy, how we manage our suppliers. Do we make bridges or do we hold people negatively accountable, for example? All comes back to the human connection that Sherry talked about, certainly. And when we talk about the concept of a circular economy, I think supply chains are uniquely positioned to really catapult the businesses and organizations that we support. And what I mean by that is, if we look at the way the world works today, we take an item from the planet, we make something very efficiently, we use it, and then typically that item gets thrown away. And there's a new economic model that says, hold on a second, all those items we're throwing away, there's actually more money to be had. We could squeeze more out of those materials and everybody makes more money. And so if we think about the way to circulate and loop all of these materials and resources, even like heat or organics or plastics or metals, it'll come down to supply chain's ability to find, circulate, move it, track it, bring it back. Is it socially responsible? Is it safe for human consumption? And I can't think of a discipline more impacted than supply chain, and the flip side, who can impact more than supply chain can. We certainly have to work across material scientists and economists and those who design these systems. But if we look at the U.S. workforce alone, 37% of jobs are supply chain related. And so we have this massive cohort. And given that we're such a new field, I think we haven't really been considered like that at a global scale. And these days, though, it's hard to read the news or turn on the radio without hearing the word supply chain every 5 minutes, which if I take my rose-colored glasses on here, I see as just a tremendous step forward for our field.
Yeah, and Deborah, you make a great point that supply chain is truly the conduit. And when you think about sustainability through the lens of supply chain and even digital, 50 to 80% of the revenue spend happens in supply chain, and so do up to 85% of the environmental impacts, social impacts of supply chain. So who better than us as supply chain practitioners who have that end-to-end interconnected view of the world, of business, of the communities where we operate, to really do something epic in the next wave in the supply chain revolution. This is our purpose right now. So that we're super excited, Tom.
If I think about, Tom, if we think about the impacts of digital supply chain. So I actually, fun fact, wrote my master's thesis on the digital supply chain. But at the time, this was 7 years ago, it was actually about digital goods. So I talked to Amazon, the Kindle team. I talked to the Netflix team. I talked to Sony. And so when they were moving digital goods around the world, and the reason why this is so important is the cloud is a real physical place that's supported by real physical supply chains. And so as we who are in software make decisions about product, or as we as consumers make decisions about how many copies of our vacation photos we keep, that has a physical impact in the cloud. And if we make choices that requires twice as much storage space, that's twice as many servers, twice as many spare parts, twice as many supply chains, twice as many power requirements, twice as many mechanics, engineers to repair, and they're going to be driving there. So you duplicate the whole thing. The other interesting factor is how much energy AI takes in chugging through their algorithms. It's something like 30% of the world's power right now is being taken just to help AI think. And these are elements that I don't think are highlighted enough, but relate very much to digital supply chain, regardless of the way you define digital supply chain, whether they're digital goods or the digital backbone that supports a physical supply chain.
You know what's crazy? So right now, a lot of people are talking about this pivot to virtual and how we connect digitally and how the CO2 impacts. And I know, Tom, this is right up your alley because you post a lot about climate change. And I saw a quick and dirty study from IBM, and I think it was Jeremy Waite that positioned that the pivot to virtual actually has the same impact as people driving every day. So when we start to think about digital supply chain in the world we share, digital waste, and are we really being as lean and effective in this new way of working? Where's the opportunity? So I would love to hear your point of view, Tom, around that. What are you hearing and seeing?
So I missed that post, and I would have assumed that working virtually, working from home, for example, like all of us are now, thanks to COVID-19, would have had a lower environmental impact. But you're saying that Jeremy's post said that, no, it's similar because the technologies we're using require large amounts of technology, which are carbon intensive.
Yeah, our energy grids are still dirty. and highly mm-hmm. reliant on fossil fuels. So depending on where you are in the country with your energy mix, you still have this a very comparable impact. So I thought it was a really, you know, in terms of education, mm-hmm. I think this is really the pulse here, and the opportunity is we need to accelerate the transition to renewables. Mm-hmm. And if we can right. do yep. that, if we can do that, you know, yep. What might that look like?
The cool thing is, and I've done a lot of work on this, the cool thing is, speaking of renewables, that the transition to those is happening. Not fast enough, but it is happening. And it's happening not because people are suddenly turning into tree huggers. It's actually happening because the renewables are, A, cheaper to roll out than any fossil fuel alternative, and B, faster to roll out. There's a new offshore wind park being built in the UK on the Dogger Bank. It's 3.6 gigawatts. That's 3.5 nuclear power plants worth of wind, offshore wind. And it's being built in 2 years from wow. start to finish. There's an equivalent. There's an equivalent called Hinkley C in the UK again. Hinkley C is a nuclear power plant. It's 3.5 gigawatts, so comparable power output. It's going to take 10 to 15 years to build it out, whereas the wind park, the offshore wind, 2 years. Yeah. So right there, and nuclear has a place. I know some people are against it. It's a polarizing generation, but it is carbon-free, essentially. Once you've built the nuclear plant, it's carbon-free. But it doesn't scale. It does not scale. Renewables scale massively. There's, because, again, down to economics, there's a solar farm being financed right now to be built in the north of Australia. It's called 5B, I think, if I remember correctly. It's being financed by, amongst others, Mike Cannon-Brooks from Jive. And it's going to be 10 gigawatts, 10 gigawatts, 10 nuclear power plants right. worth of solar with 22 gigawatt hours of storage. So 22 nuclear power plants worth of storage in the Northern Territories in Australia. They're going to draw a big cable off to the right to power the city of Darwin, and they're going to draw an even longer cable north, 3,500 kilometers, to power the city of Singapore.
Wow.
You know, and again, it's down to economics. It's because it's the cheapest way to do it. Australia has vast, vast, vast tracts of unused desert, which can be used for these kinds of projects, which can be used for turning Australia into a hydrogen economy. You know, they can just put up massive, massive solar plants, generate as much hydrogen as possible, and sell that hydrogen off into the global markets for electricity generation or for transportation.
It's amazing.
I'm so glad you brought that example up, Tom, just to reiterate the brilliance and excitement around circular models. One of the tenets is a shift to renewable sources of energy. And, you know, there's two questions to ask yourself on if a model is circular or if it just falls under CSR. And that's, is it making you more money? You can go faster and you can be cheaper if you're looking at something like a circular business model. And in supply chain, I don't know how many more levers we have left to pull to get faster or cheaper. We're pretty right. fast and sure. we're pretty cheap. Free yeah, in most yeah. cases, or nobody's paying for it, at least we have a cost. So we have to start thinking of other levers to pull to add additional value back to the organizations we support. And so the examples you're giving are brilliant because we're going faster, it's cheaper. And then if we think about, let's say, a spare part to support one of these farms that's going in, we could start from scratch, start from the metal, from the earth, but that takes more time and it's going to cost you more. If you can refurbish yep. and use B-channel parts or even your own parts refurbishing, or shocking, I see a world where all similar parts will be refurbed and shared in within a single industry, it's going to be much, much faster and it's going to be much, much cheaper because you're not starting sure. from virgin raw materials anymore. So I think it's a fascinating model. And the biggest message to get through this is you can make more money as a company. And it just so happens that it's also great for the planet. So it helps to span this gap of the sustainability drive that we all know needs to happen and the sheer economics of running an economy that we're all becoming very aware of these days. And I think it's just a lovely example. So thanks for sharing that.
Yeah. And you mentioned something earlier, Deborah, where, I mean, you used the expression that a lot of people use of throwing things away. And I remember, I can't remember when it was or where it was, but I remember reading some point somebody saying that there is no away.
Yeah.
Away is not a place. It doesn't exist.
That's
you
great.
Know?
Yeah.
You know, so throwing things away doesn't make sense. It's not
it
a thing.
Someplace else. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I actually think in the next, after we mine the ocean for plastic, and let's not be mistaken, that's exactly what companies are doing now. We are now mining the ocean. We will move to landfills, I'm guessing, in the next 10 years, because we are running out. We're running out of gold. We're running out of copper. It is still on the surface of the planet, to your point, unless cities are burning. And a lot of people say, oh, cool, you're burning garbage to create energy. But that's actually not great because you're losing all the value in the material. So, yes, you're getting a short-term boost of energy bursts. But actually, in reality, that's the closest thing to a way that we have is to burn something and you can no longer get it back again. So much better is to find a way to retain the value of that item
and
use it as many times as you can.
Yeah, what we're talking about here and describing is really this shift where supply chains who have traditionally been viewed as maybe transactional and this cost improvement, you know, riddle it down to as efficient as possible. They're really transitioning to an innovative catalyst that is a strategic partner at the table. And in the future of work, in the future of business, competitiveness will be defined how your supply chain can execute and innovate. And that's where we really believe that that's where the future's heading. All of the things that are described in circular economy and sustainability, yes, you can do well and do good, but there is a business case to be made for why. How you connect people is equally as important when you think about purpose economy and experience economy. People want to show up at work and not leave their values at the door and be a part of something that's truly transformational and epic. And this is the opportunity that supply chains have because we are so end-to-end and we are a tapestry of different professionals. You know, when you say supply chain, what does that even mean anymore? It could mean data science. It could mean sourcing and procurement. It could mean you're in distribution or
logistics.
Yeah, it could
inventory.
Mean anything. Deborah loves inventory. If you ever meet Deborah Tom face-to-face and bring up inventory, make sure you have a stiff pour of whiskey because she will talk to you for hours.
Ooh, digital inventory is also super interesting. I had a whole section in my thesis on it.
Tell us about it.
Punchline, it basically comes down to master data, which is also a very interesting topic. People roll their eyes, but it's not. So it's often considered the inventory of a digital goods supply chain if you're moving around digital goods. It's your master data. And that the way you manage your master data is similar to managing inventory. And you can use a lot of the same principles. Super fascinating. I love this stuff. that was not even a whole stiff pour, Sherry. See, that was like half a finger of a stiff pour.
I had no whiskey ready. Jeez, Deborah, come on. You could have warned
me. I know. Next time. That'll be a different one. We do something called Drink and Learns on our podcast. And we invite you to come to a Drink and Learn where we drink and learn. And it's really super fun. And
it's super fun.
You're openly invited, Tom, anytime.
I appreciate it. Thank you. I have listened to your podcast, so I'm aware of some of these things. So thank you. But for people who haven't listened, this is a good learning experience. And I'll put a link to your podcast in the show notes as well, just in case, you know, people are not aware of it. They can follow through and subscribe. And do subscribe, folks. Like, and do subscribe to this one, too, just in case you're not already subscribed. We're coming towards the 20-minute mark. We're at 18:50 right now. Is there any final things you want to say to people who, you know, have been listening so far, who've made it this far into the podcast? Any last messages you want to leave with them?
Absolutely. Look, yes.
Go ahead, Deborah.
Okay, Sherry's pointing at me, so we can see each other right now. So my final words are, look, there's enough bad news happening in the world. We are all probably indoors for something going on 2 to 4 weeks, depending on where you are in the world. And there's another way to connect with each other. One use of this digital technology that, yes, is using energy in a server somewhere in the world is that you can find a new community. We have something that we call the supply chain rebel, who really describes if you feel different than those around you, if you feel like you're pushing back, if you feel like perhaps you don't have a community to connect to, we are your community. And whether you are feeling too old, too young, not experienced enough, too edgy, too soft, whatever the two is that you're feeling in your surroundings, we're your people. So do come join together with us. We have a great time, and we really look forward to connecting with you all.
Yes, thank you. Super. Thank you so much, Tom, for inviting us. The disruptors, the rebels, and final message, like Deborah said, find us, supplychainrevolution.com. I have admired Tom's work and his point of view for many years, and I salute you. And your fabulous swagger. I love the hat. I love your brand. So we're just really thrilled to find others. And I think right now the opportunity is there are others out here like you. And we can unite, especially in across digital platforms, social platforms, and really change the world. I think that sometimes people forget the impact that you can have in the world we share. And that's really this message that we would hope you walk away from, that you can change the world.
Super. Super. Yes. Sherry, Deborah, thanks a million for joining me on the show today.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you.
Okay, we've come to the end of the show. Thanks, everyone, for listening. If you'd like to know more about digital supply chains, head on over to sap.com/digital supply chain, or simply drop me an email to tom.raftery@sap.com. If you like the show, please don't forget to subscribe to it in your podcast application to get new episodes right away as soon as they're published. And also, please don't forget to rate and review the podcast. It really does help new people to find the show. Thanks. Catch you all next time.